A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Act now and save big for a limited time. Get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price. Normally $240 a year, you can now subscribe for just $199, and we'll throw in an extra month for free. That is 13 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets, real-time betting splits, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Don't miss this incredible offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now and use promo code ANG to claim your discount and bonus month. This special deal won't last long. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe today and use promo code ANG. Coming up this hour, Jay Kahn, SiriusXM NHL, in 30 minutes to break down the Stanley Cup Final. We'll dive into the French Open, Kelly, in 15 minutes. Alex de Minaur, a game away from pulling the quote-unquote seeding upset over Daniil Medvedev and booking himself a place in the quarterfinals. We'll get a little two-team moneyline parlay in there as well in 15 minutes that is yet to go off, so we'll discuss that next. But right now, we welcome in our pal Mark Borchard at Base Winner. Joins us every single Monday as we got to our progressive guest line. And welcome in, Mark. You know, Mark and I, Kelly, were in the last segment just having a great spirited discussion on the cadence of Major League Baseball broadcasters, which I think is a great discussion to have. I know Mark has thoughts as we welcome him in, Mark, because you watch a lot of baseball, probably more than most, I think it's fair to say.
I do. I listen to a lot on the radio. I actually like listening to it better on the radio. In fact, I think that you could have a segment one of these days, because there's a lot of free time here between now and when the football season starts. Maybe you guys could actually rate, and you would be good because you're an actual broadcaster, good broadcaster, and you would actually be a good. I would listen to a whole hour show on rating baseball broadcasters personally.
Now that would be a great show. I'm glad that Mark would be a viewer of that. Maybe the only one, because I don't know how that would work, Kelly. But I'm all in that camp, Kelly. You got to make some. Kelly's very important here at the network. You can maybe make some calls.
Ben, you're my favorite play-by-play guy. Okay, come on. Any list starts and ends with you. Okay?
Oh, what a,
that's like Joe
well,
Buck and then
really
you.
Good. You know what? I hate to be an ass kisser, but he is really good. I've heard him do play-by-play, and he's excellent.
Oh, thanks. So. Yeah, we don't like ass kissers, but you know,
you would be in the top 10 if I had a baseball rating. So you know who I'd like was listening to, and I don't know what you think, but John Miller. I think he's just classic, and he was calling the Doval meltdown yesterday, and I thought he did a really good job on calling the Camilo Doval meltdown yesterday.
I would say Sunday Night Baseball has not been the same since the John Miller Joe Morgan team was broken up and no longer exists. John Miller still on the San Francisco Giants broadcast team, but yeah, I think Sunday Night Baseball. I think John Miller. And that is the first of our many broadcasting discussions we'll have with Mark Borchard, Kelly. I can't wait for this whenever I'm on here on Mondays. I wanted to – you talk about San Francisco Giants who are struggling right now. You talk about the bullpen. But I want to go to teams that are playing really well right now because we have a number of streaking teams here for a variety of reasons. And one series – I want to ask you specifically about the game tonight, Mark, because Milwaukee hasn't named a starting pitcher yet. But what do you make of this Brewers-Phillies series where the crew just sweep the awful White Sox who found new ways to lose multiple games over the weekend? And then Philadelphia, who is riding this incredible streak, 40-18 here coming in. What do you make of the matchup here? Your two teams who were both unexpected to be division leaders at this stage, but both now with healthy 7-plus game leads in their divisions.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was higher than most on the Brewers before the season started, and I think I have them at either plus 650 or plus 600, and I didn't think that they would have a 7.5. I was like more bullish on them than the average guy, and I didn't think that they'd have a 7.5 game lead. In fact, they have the biggest lead in baseball of all the teams leading their division, and I don't think you could have predicted that prior to the season on June 3rd. The Brewers would have the biggest lead, and the Phillies, they just keep hitting and getting really good pitching I think it's expected to get a really, like, you talk about a low variance, you know, high production guy with Zach Wheeler, so that's no surprise. But Suarez to me has been very surprising. So I don't know. I personally, my numbers are real high on the Braves. I think the Braves can still get there and win that division, but this Phillies team, I like them to make the playoffs, did not like them to win a division. This particular game here, that the two starters I have, as we just talked about, Wheeler against Bryce Wilson, I have it priced at minus 132, and it's hard to get a price on this particular game. I don't know if I'm going to be playing much on this game. on the series. I think it's one of those series where I want to see, I want this Brewers team to kind of prove it to me. I mean, I've got them rated ahead of the Phillies offensively. I have them fifth in baseball, and that takes a look at 500 plate appearances for each guy in that lineup. So it's a pretty decent sample. And I mean, they've been surprising, honestly. I mean, it's kind of hard to say that they're the fifth best offense in baseball, really.
Yet the numbers don't lie so far, at least on the Milwaukee Brewers' 7-game lead over the Cardinals. Phillies 41-19. I correct myself on that on the record now. 6.5-game lead over Atlanta. And we get into this every year, Mark, especially now you're into the month of June, right? We've had a good amount of sample size. And for the preseason favorites in respective divisions, like in Atlanta, who are off to slow starts by their lofty standards, this is always, it seems like, the natural time to go, all right, There are times you pick out maybe a buy low opportunity, and Atlanta's now nearly 2-1 to win their division here, Mark. If you had not had a preseason bet on the Braves, which many did, and you were sitting in here just clean slate as far as a betting portfolio, is that a team you would advocate for, or is there a different team here who's gotten off to a slow start that you would say is a better bet value-wise to make a comeback and earn their way back a spot in the division crown?
No, I think that if you don't have any money in that NL East, I think that the Braves would be a good bet. In fact, I have them winning this division. And what I do is I do a Monte Carlo simulation with the remainder of the schedule, whatever they've done to date, and it takes a look at the relief ratings, the starter ratings, and the ratings offensively and from fielding defensively, and it just simulates the season. And I've got the Braves winning more than 50% of the time. So if you can get that kind of price with them, I would advocate that. I think that, you know, offensively, even with Acuna out, there's still and he really, you subtracted a lot. I was almost a third of a run from production when you took out Acuna from the lineup. But even with that, they're still higher than the Phillies. The Phillies are seventh. The Braves are third-ish, depending on the split that you're looking at. And then I think that, you know, one of the things that we don't look at is the quality of the bullpen when we're trying to simulate these seasons. And that's one of the things I think that when you simulate the season in a Monte Carlo simulation, it picks up that bullpen quite a bit, because you got to think, these bullpens are getting at least half the game, and so I'm high still on the Braves bullpen, and I'm high on the Twins bullpen. I think the Twins bullpen's one of the better ones in baseball. So those are the two teams that I still think are a little bit undervalued in the future market.
Meanwhile, I remember listening to your quarterly pod with Gil on his show here a few weeks ago, talking about Houston still being relatively undervalued. They come in today 7.5 back now of the streaking Mariners, 26-34. Send Justin Verlander to the bump tonight against the St. Louis Cardinals, who have been now a 500 team after a recent surge in form here. What do you make just of the, not of the Astros necessarily in general, but you know, Justin Verlander's a guy now who, five of the last 6 years since he moved to Houston, he has outperformed, his ERA has outperformed his expected fielding independent pitching, such a savvy veteran presence on the mound. What do you make of some of his numbers this year, which once again suggests some negative regression, but we're so used to seeing Verlander pitch above that it wouldn't surprise us for him to see another near 3 ERA?
Yeah, that's a really good observation. In fact, he's kind of baffled me, because as somebody who likes to bet on expected regression, he doesn't do that, at least all the time. And I think that, you know, sometimes you have a pitcher that, and you hate to say, well, it's just a quality of his spirit, whatever, if you're a metric handicapper, but maybe the guy just outperforms his advanced metrics. But you're talking about this Astros team, and I don't necessarily know if it's time to dismantle or time to get real sour on this team. You're still looking at a seventh in baseball bullpen, the third best offense in baseball by my numbers. But I think what was interesting, I think this is the first time that Seattle has shown that they're the favorite to win this division. And it's really kind of a three-way race. I think everybody has about a 30 to 35% chance by my simulations, Houston, Seattle, and Texas. So it depends on, you know, what you want to get from a value standpoint. But I think Houston's in there like a plus 300 right now. I think that's still a pretty decent play.
Mark Borcher joining us here on A Numbers Game. Follow him at Base Winner, Pro Baseball Better. Mark, for the lighter Monday card today, anything you already have here in pocket?
You know, I'm going to play on the Padres today. And I normally don't bet run line plays, but I'm going to bet the Padres -1.5. I think you can get them at plus 120. And I think with these knuckleballers, and I've seen it over the years, I've been watching baseball probably 40 years, man. Gosh, wow. And sometimes when these knuckleballers have it, they're really hard to hit. And when they don't have it, they're really easy to hit. So I think if you play the Padres here, my model has it at minus 192. The money line is minus 136 in the market. I think if you play the Padres, though, you play it on the run line. Waldron's strikeout numbers have been pretty good his last two games. And I think we get a huge edge offensively. This Angels team, 22nd in baseball offensively versus the Padres, 8th in baseball.
DraftKings best number in the market there, plus 124 on the Padres. Pro baseball bettor and MLB broadcast aficionado, Mark Borcher. That's what I would like to, tee you up on, Mark. Follow him at Base Winner. Good to see you as always, pal. Best of luck on the bets today.
Thanks, man. Have a good day.
Absolutely. We will, because we're about to dive into some French Open tennis. Alex de Minaur has just punched his ticket into the quarterfinal. We'll talk about two players I like to get to the quarters when we come back.
Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game presented by Zyn Nicotine Pouches as we are live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil Alexander. Next few days, Kelly Bidlin next to me here on the desk. French Open underway here and a couple more matches to go here on this Monday. Novak Djokovic takes the first set over Francisco Cerundolo 6-1 as he looks to advance to the quarterfinals. We're about 10 minutes away from Taylor Fritz and Casper Ruud getting underway. That is the match that would meet the winner of the Djokovic-Cerundolo match. Again, I've got the two-leg moneyline parlay there going Ruud in leg one. Sasha Zverev over Holger Rune in leg two pays about minus one. I got that minus 104 yesterday. We're looking at about minus 110 or so if you bet that right now. Exciting stuff, Kelly. French Open.
Ben, I'm always happy to do shows with you, but I would be lying if I didn't say I have got one of my eyes kind of down the hallway waiting for people with torches to show up.
Yes.
After your ego slander.
Ego slander. Yeah. We do. I think this is the most tweets. I've filled in for Gil, probably a dozen times. So by far the most tweets we've ever gotten on a single show, which is awesome.
I like how you didn't even go after Iga, but I get to spin it that way.
You do get to spin it that way. From Brian, it's been anarchy on AG. That's a great word, anarchy. There has been Iga slander. What's next? Handing out sushi spots and saying Giants Magic is steroids? Oh, good. Would you like me to give my top five sushi places in Vegas, Kelly?
Do you actually have a top five?
I mean,
what's your favorite spot?
I could think about it right now, and then I would. Because, like, to me,
I don't think I have a favorite sushi spot in this town. There are multiple really good ones that I've been to.
To me, it's all different categories. Like, to me, like, best value on the strip, if you want to have like the quintessential strip sushi experience, is it Caesar's, the sushi spot they have there, which is really nice because it overlooks the. You kind of see the fountains. You see the strip from there. It's just like a really nice spot. It's really tucked away in the Forum Shop, so you don't really feel like you're in that hustle and bustle of the big Caesars area. And I don't know why I'm blanking on the name.
The Caesars shops. You are right. It's nice. It is nice because you get you get away from the craziness of Caesars Palace, where it becomes that. Sometimes
it's on the second level of the Forum Shops.
I actually don't know what you're talking. I don't think I've eaten there.
It is way in the corner. What? Roku,
okay.
There are several Rokus around the country.
Yeah.
But I just like it. It's literally the farthest. If you go to the Forum Shops, it is the farthest restaurant on the second floor. So, like, you're going to get your steps in getting there. But it's a great ambiance. It's the value. It's not superly overpriced like a lot of strip places are just in general, which to me matters a lot.
Well, you hit on something there that I think, like, there's a couple things that surprise me in this town. There's always the restaurants like that, where you've got a great view of either like Bellagio fountains and the strip area there, where like, I know it sounds very touristy and cheesy, but like, it never gets old. Sorry. Like, that, watching the Bellagio fountains to me never gets old at night. Like, it's something that's never boring. The other one is like, how many of the hotel casinos in town have up like a bar that is somehow upstairs somewhere, right, whether it's rooftop or elevator, that's people never know about, and they're always like the best bars to go to in all these casinos. Like the one Resorts World, I love that one. I forget what it's called, the LA Lounge or something like that.
Right.
It's great. You go upstairs, have a drink, you can see the whole city all lit up and everything.
It's awesome. You know, you don't have to be over the top bougie to find a great sushi spot. You know, everybody's got their own legends. Anyway, that's that's kind of my go-to if I have friends in town. That's always a recommendation for me as well. Other tweet here from Primetime. I'm sorry, legendary Homestead High School situational lefty. Bet is not long for Vincent. I look forward to his homecoming, going back as the future play-by-play of the Bucks. Hey, that would be a dream job. I'd love to be the voice of the Bucks someday. And the numbers guys, crafty left-hander. They're a fan of the crafty left-hander. Listen to a local morning show with a former Tigers play-by-play guy who didn't understand why there were no crafty right-handers, which is the comment of the day so far, Kelly. That's great.
Not maybe, a lot of crafty
maybe because
righties.
The population is 6-1 righties, but you're right. When's the last time you heard of a crafty righty?
Never in my life. In fact, I don't think you would have been on that team if you weren't a lefty.
There's no way I would have been on that team. There was one time I remember where I started just getting loose in the bullpen because it was like a 7-1 game and there's nothing to do. I'm like, just throw. And after the game, my dad was like, people in our section, like, we saw you throwing in the pen and we're like, whoa, like Ben's about to get in. And I was like, my coach didn't tell me to. I just did that on my own. Like that was not an official, hey, Ben, get hot.
Oh, man.
And he was so disappointed. He's like, really?
Poor
they weren't
going to
bring you in that spot if the game got a little bit hairy? I'm like, I mean, maybe if they saw me throwing. But no, did not happen that way. Anyway, thank you. That great segment of We Get Tweets. On to the NBA Finals, Kelly, which I heard you and Dustin Sweetelson breaking down for approximately 3 hours yesterday on Live Bet Sunday.
Oh, but I've got so much more to say.
I jokingly said we will yesterday on the handle with Mike Somich that we've got approximately 1,812.5 is our over-under on number of segments before we get to game one of the finals, since it's not till Thursday night. But Celtics and Mavericks, I think each day is good to kind of focus on one specific thing here within this series. So I wanted to focus, shocker, on the Luka Doncic piece of this for at least for today, Kelly, who is, again, if you are looking to bet this series here pre-flop, if you like Dallas and you have any sort of conviction on the Mavericks who are in that plus 180 range, Doncic to win finals MVP to me is the only bet you can really make if you are just on the camp of I want to bet Dallas in some form or fashion, where you're getting plus 215 if you're shopping around in some markets. There just isn't a world in which Dallas wins the series where Doncic is not playing at an MVP level. So as much as it can be convenient to say, well, it's like the Mahomes Super Bowl equivalent, to me it's even more directly correlated to that on Luka Doncic. And the one thing that I have really been struck by, and this is just kind of a general media narrative thing, Kelly, that goes back years with Doncic, and maybe this has to do with his appearance, his tendency to be out of shape at the start of seasons, but he does not nearly get the defensive credit that he deserves, I would say. When you just watch some of the non-box score stuff, just the deflections, the hands in passing lanes, his ability to make guys work as a perimeter defender, he's already a guy you feel like you're guaranteed to get 30 a night with him scoring-wise. Mm-hmm. But his defense has gone to another level in the postseason, and as much as people can point to Dallas being the number one defensive-rated team over the final 15 games of the regular season, then through the postseason, with adding guys like Daniel Gafford and P.J. Washington mid-season, that's been a big reason of it. But I would also counter that Doncic going to another level on both ends of the floor has been the biggest single factor, and why I believe you have to make Dallas, at the very least, a very live dog in this series, despite all of the historical data that would say a team like Boston, how good they have been. I mean, 14 of the 15 20 loss or fewer teams to make the finals has won in the finals. Golden State 2017 being the only exception to that all time. But I still believe with the level Doncic is at, he has the ability to make this, at the very least, a 6-7 game series here against Boston. That's kind of where I wanted to start on this.
No, I love it. I think the defensive point's a good one. I think it's been better. I'm not going to sit here and say Luka Doncic is a great NBA defender by any means, but I think it's a little bit of what I think it's in the nuance of the Gobert Minnesota discussion too, a little bit, right? Where when the rest of the defense around you get, like, okay, you have a Gobert who allows the rest of the defense to go to a next level because they can rely on him, fall back on him, right? When you elevate the defense that's around you on the roster, when it comes to Dallas, I think it automatically brings some of the guys that are at the bottom up a notch too when they see some of the effort that's being played and the quality of defense that's being played by some of those other guys. So I think it's a great point by you. You definitely saw that become a factor in the Minnesota series. Luka was there defensively, was there gobbling up some rebounds and stuff like that. So I completely 100% was sitting over here nodding the whole time when you were talking about the MVP discussion. I think this is The Mahomes comp is a good one. I think it's right there. Maybe I think his odds are too long. Even at 205, if you're talking a 20-cent difference between what the price is on the series for the Mavericks and where he's at Finals MVP. I think that's too big of a difference. I'm with you there. I think it should be even shorter than that. Dustin and I talked about a little bit about that on Live Bet Sunday yesterday. So I already bet it. It's a bet that I added already. Luka, Finals MVP. I do like the Mavericks here. And I think, if we're talking series price. We've seen the Mavericks taking money, really ever since this opened. But I still think if you like Dallas – I think you're still hopping on that side now. I expect there's going to be some Boston buyback at some point, but I think it's going to be very close, really close to game one and day of stuff, Ben, because I think there is, if you are a Boston bettor, there's no reason to get in on this series price now, because really all we're seeing is this Dallas money coming in and driving down this Boston price. And I know there are several sharp NBA guys out there that are going to be on Boston that are just waiting for this price to get as low as humanly possible. I know South Point went down to minus 200 yesterday. That has bounced back to minus 210. We're basically minus 210, 205, that range kind of everywhere right now. So I think if you like Boston here, there's no reason to rush.
There was, outside of that, there was the brief tick up for game one line that was opened at Boston -5.5, quickly up to 6.5. Been very static since then as we approach the Thursday night game one. You know, the other angle I'm looking at, too, on the Doncic side here, Kelly, who, look, defensively, we've seen it with the steals. He's averaging over a steal and a half a game. He had five steals game three against Minnesota. It was excellent in that series. But in the postseason, it's also translated to him crashing the glass, being much more aggressive and hard-nosed as a defender in the paint. He's averaging over 9.5 rebounds per game now in the postseason, and he's plus 180 to lead the finals in rebounds. It's the only category Doncic is not the favorite in. But I would actually say of all those categories, rebounding is the one where you get the most value there. Jason Tatum is the minus 150 favorite, but if Kristaps Porzingis comes back and is healthy, is obviously going to have a massive impact with his size and defensive presence in the paint as a rebounder. Naturally, that takes some boards away from a Tatum, and it maybe reduces some of the raw numbers that we've seen so far in the postseason and the reason why Tatum is favored in that market. So to me, it goes a step further on Doncic. I wouldn't mind either looking at the rebound leader prop as a plus 180 bet as a non-favorite.
Good. We can battle on that one. We'll talk through that more tomorrow because I am loaded up on Tatum.
Heavy Tatum. All right. Yeah. I can't wait to.
I think with all those, though, that's a good point. Maybe we could touch on this a little bit on the other side. If you are interested in betting any of those series props, shop around now because the prices are wildly different.
That is a great point as well. Finish up the NBA Finals talk next. Talk some college baseball, some regional winner or go home games today.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two of a numbers game rolls on from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. We still have Mike Somich still to come, weekend host of The Handle. I got to spend six great hours, Kelly, with Mike Somich over the weekend, filling in for Matt Brown, who's off in Scotland playing golf right now.
Jerk.
Matt texted me the other day. He is having fun. He's like, oh, I played Carduste, but there was wind and rain and but it was awesome. I'm like, yeah.
Isn't that kind of how you want to play it?
You want the elements. If you're one Matt Brown. We were comparing, vacation golf photos because I was playing in Bermuda, and I was like, this is pretty awesome. And Matt was like, yeah, it looks pretty cool. Well, I'm at Carnoustie right now, so, And I'm like, touche. Way to go, Matt. Way to go. Kelly, your response is proper. Shake it ahead. There's nothing more you need to say.
It's a rough life out here for Ben Wilson and Matt Brown.
Sorry. Mike Somich coming up in 15 minutes. We'll give his thoughts, Stanley Cup Finals, as well as the NBA Finals and any Major League Baseball plays Mike has today. We'll talk college baseball. We have four regional finals that are true win or go home to decide super regional matchups. Could be a fifth. There was one weather-delayed game that had to be postponed, moved to today, that could potentially force a fifth regional final. We'll break all that down here before we wrap up. But some NBA talk here continuing on the overall series. So you have loaded up, Kelly, on Jason Tatum to lead the series in rebounding. First, I'll ask you what price. And then second,
minus 105.
Yeah, okay, 105. Yeah, DraftKings, it's minus I'm just looking at the DraftKings numbers, minus 150. And so as a result, these books do vary pretty wildly on the price. That is a very good number. We also think about where this general thought process is on the series as a whole. You can give your explanation here for the Tatum piece. Then we'll kind of pitch you to a segment soundbite we had from yesterday on Live Bet Sunday, just talking about general thought process here for the NBA Finals. But first, Kelly, explain your Tatum piece, because I gave my thoughts on the Doncic rebounding.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's first of all, the Porzingis will be a factor. Yeah, undeniably. I do think that I'm in that camp of people, though, still, that man, you hear from some people that it just feels like there's this massive assumption that Porzingis is going to be good to go 100% for game one. I just don't know that we should be fully believing that yet. Yes, he practiced on Saturday, but it was a light practice. And Joe Vardon, who we are going to hear from here shortly from The Athletic, he was on with us yesterday. I mean, he said even he thought it was a little bit more cautious with what Porzingis is going to be like. It's such a massive factor to this series. And I don't know. You never want to play doctor. I just don't know. I don't know if I fully believe he's going to be 100% for the series. Wouldn't be shocked if he did. Maybe miss some more time. So that's something I'm watching closely. Having said that, though, I think the way that they're going to play this, Ben, so much is going to be trying to Porzingis. Not as much towards the basket, because you want to be able to draw out those Dallas bigs, which we really haven't seen a team be able to take advantage of pulling those guys away from the basket. And they've been so good between Gafford and Lively with protecting the rim and protecting the basket. I think Boston's going to look to do that, which drags Porzingis away, opens up some of the rebounding for these guys to crash in from the outside. I think Tatum's going to have a lot of those opportunities, averaging over 10 rebounds during the playoffs. I really think this is going to be Tatum or Luka when you're talking about who leads it. You are right. I think that there's about 1.3 rebounds a game that Luka Doncic gets that are simply, okay, rebounds up in the air. There's three Dallas Mavericks there. One of them's going to get it. And the other two guys think, well, I could rebound the ball and then pass it to Luka right away to bring it down the court. Or let me just get out of the way and let him grab the rebound. I'm making a joke about it, but seriously, when you're betting on stuff like that, there's so many that feel that way. Tatum, though, I think the matchups that he's going to have are going to allow him to be athletic on the rim. I'm interested to see if there are any Porzingis issues at all. Does Boston try to go a little bit smaller as well? If they're getting killed by the bigs on the inside by Dallas and we've seen Tatum at the five here throughout the playoffs at times. Horford, I just don't know if Horford's going to be able to hold up with all the minutes that are going to be required, if he's really going to be asked to do a lot. And if that's the case, I do think you're going to see some Tatum at the five. My handicap's really not about that, though. It's mainly just the consistency of a rebounder that Jason Tatum is within this system, with whether Porzingis is there or not. Those numbers are always consistent. And I thought at minus 105, again, different story at minus 150, but shop around, because I bet it on Saturday. Minus 105. Was out there. I think he has a really, really, really good chance to lead this series. Luke would be the only guy I'm really that concerned about.
10.4.
I don't think the bigs. I just don't think the bigs are going to come into play, because on the Dallas side, Gafford and Lively split the time, right? And they're going to continue to do that, so they kind of, they take away rebounds from each other.
10.4 postseason rebounds per game for Tatum. That's over two up from the regular season. A lot of that has to do with the lack of Kristaps Porzingis.
Minutes played.
Minutes played as well. You have Doncic at 9.6, slightly up as well from his regular season numbers there in the postseason on that. You weren't convinced by the Porzingis, the stationary shooting videos that came out over the weekend, Kelly? That wasn't getting you fired up about, oh, KP going to be snagging 10 boards a game?
Even like the couple reporters and people I heard or we talked to that were there, were there around the team. They said, regardless of Porzingis, it was a very light practice in general, so it was hard to take anything from that at all, but especially anything out of Porzingis' health.
Samich and I were debating what's the top five, injured athlete videos coming back. Like, he made the good point of, I think the Tiger Woods chipping was the best, because, it's chipping. it's hilarious. Chipping, putting. I personally thought that was a very good one, too. I always like the boxing ones where it's just the guy softly just going into the punching bag. It's like, cool, bro. You know how to.
Right.
We're aware. You know how to punch. That is a very basic thing. You are doing that thing. So congrats to you. This was the soundbite that Kelly and Dustin Sweetelson aired had yesterday from guest Joe Vardon of The Athletic, talking about just general media perception here and where a lot of smart NBA minds are thinking as we approach the finals.
Well, first of all, I have not. I've been waiting to say this. I'm not sure. Like, I've been waiting for like the right avenue or the right opening to drop this in. I have two very prominent NBA people who work in the league that you would know, who both tell me Dallas is winning the series, and I'm saying really, and they're both saying that Luka is just too much. That he is unstoppable right now, and that there's nothing anybody can do about it. And it's going to be a case where the best guy on the best team, or the best guy in the series, he wins it. Yeah. for his team.
Joe Vardon from The Athletic joining Live Bet Sunday yesterday. And it's fascinating, Kelly, when you hear that. Yep. Compared with the fact that were Dallas to win the series, believe it or not, going back to the merger, they would be the third biggest underdog to win an NBA Finals since the mid-70s.
I think it's
pretty wild.
I think it's fascinating. You brought up the stats earlier of just teams with this few losses, how well they've done.
14-1 in Finals all time.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating matchup. Yes, I'm on the Dallas side. I have tickets already, but even if I didn't have my futures tickets, Ben, I'd still be leaning Dallas for this series and for a lot of what Joe just talked about. I just think Luka's too much right now, and we're finally seeing him getting a bit healthier, looking a bit more like himself on the court. Yes, the Boston defense is incredible, but we've gone through two series now where you talked about the number one ISO defense in the league in OKC, number two ISO defense in the league in Minnesota, and by far the best defense in the league in Minnesota, and not able to slow him down, really. I mean, I think OKC slowed him down a little bit more, but that was partially because of injury. More so, I think Luka's just at that level. And that is with all due respect to Drew Holiday, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, who are all great defenders, will probably all get a look at guarding Luka at some point. I think he's too much right now, the way he's orchestrating these offenses. And I'm interested to see how the Celtics do attack that defensively, Ben, because I think you're going to see Derek White over on Kyrie. And I think if you're Boston, you almost as much as possible want to take Kyrie out of the game. If you can at least just narrow this down to just Luka and not have to worry about the Kyrie factor that's been a factor in so many of these second halves throughout the playoffs, if they can shut him down, I think they stand maybe a better chance that way. But it's kind of like the Jokic defense we talk about a lot, right? We're like, let him get his. Just don't let him distribute to everybody else around the court. I kind of feel like that's Boston's best chance, but if that's Boston's best chance, you're talking about some massive numbers that Luka's going to put up during this series. And I think they have the guys to throw at him. I just don't know. The past two teams they've played have had the guys to throw at him, too, and it hasn't been much of a problem for Luka Doncic.
Still looking to price shop on some of these, Kelly, but the total games, the 5.5, DraftKings has it over -150, but that is a bet. It comes down to price shopping, getting the best number. Whether I want to do over 5.5 or just splitting bets series ending in 6/7.
I bet Mavs in 6 as well.
Mavs in 6, okay.
Yeah, I took a piece of that. I bet some series bets. I did that. We'll run through them all tomorrow.
But I'm saying is this to be a deep series, that to me feels like, as closer to a sure thing mathematically as I would feel comfortable betting into, while still giving yourself giving the insurance at least that Boston, who has just incredible regular season, postseason historical numbers, still wins the series, yet it will just take a long way for them to do so. It's our early thought here on the NBA Finals. We'll continue the discussion with Game 1 coming up Thursday night. Get Mike Somich's thoughts on the NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals, and some baseball on the card today when we come back to a numbers game.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN. The crown is yours. Final edition of We Get Tweets, which we've set a record here, Kelly, which you are convinced it's because people just didn't know what random Twitter handle I have.
I refuse
to change since my high school volleyball days, but it's neither here nor there. I just refuse to change it.
I jumped around with, like, the company tag for, like, years, depending on where I was working, until randomly one primetime action night, Matt Brown discovered that my name was available. Someone had it before. Like, it was never available.
Interesting.
And then somehow it opened up.
We have some good ones from Mike Zills. If she's crafty, she's just my type. I like that. Talking about the I called myself a crafty lefty in high school, a pitcher, which basically means I was not a very good pitcher. Tom, a crafty right-hander is called a junk baller. That's also fair. Good one from Scotty, thanking Kelly for having class and setting me straight on the prejudiced Cup Out of Canada BS, which he reminded me, I said Saturday and Sunday on the handle, and I thought about it, and I was like,
man, you're
right, Scotty. I did say it Saturday and Sunday on the handle. P.S. Cup is in Canada every summer because the majority of players on the U.S. teams are Canadian. Hurry back, Gil. And it's been a running joke. Honestly, it's been a Twitter running joke in NHL circles for like over a decade. Just another year, another non-Canadian team winning the cup. And I'm an American. I just half-heartedly go along with that joke.
But yeah, only
Kelly is defending our friends to the north today.
What is it, like 75% of the league's Canadian? Come on. Yeah, like I feel bad.
You do kind of feel bad
teams.
At a certain point.
They only get six teams up there, too.
At a certain
man.
Point. I know.
You want to talk golf from the weekend real quick? Who are you rooting for? Ben Griffin?
Yeah, Ben Griffin,
just had me dying during the break.
Yeah.
My
mind works in weird ways, and we're sitting here, and I just randomly was like, you know what? I'm happy to see Ben Griffin show up at a tournament. Because he's actually been a model guy. He's had very good numbers. I followed him a couple holes at Torrey Pines a couple years ago when he was young, coming up on tour, and he just hasn't really put together any big weeks, even though we'll kind of pop on some of the modeling stuff. And finished second. I thought it was amazing. I don't know if you did anything pre-round four, Kelly, but the fact that Robert McIntyre, this is another week where a guy with a massive pre-final round lead was not respected at all in the market. Bobby Mack was -110 yesterday, pre-final round going out, with a four-shot lead. And it wasn't like he had Scheffler and prime Tiger Woods breathing down his neck either. I mean, it was Mackenzie Hughes. And I mean, there was Rory McIlroy, seven back. But Tommy Fleetwood, five back. But I thought that was kind of nuts. We discussed it yesterday on the air.
Okay, Fleetwood, Burns, Rory were just close enough for me not to bet it, Ben. I'm glad you brought this up, though, because I got, I think three text messages were like, and from a couple people I don't normally get text messages about on this were like, this big of a lead and I can get like -105, -110 on this. What am I missing? I thought the names close enough were enough to scare me off, but good on Bobby Mack picking up the win. Had his dad on the bag. This was not ended up being a frustrating Sunday for me because it was.
Well, Bobby Mack, he's been such a bad putter all year, and yet going into the final round, he was leading the field. He was almost +4 strokes gained putting. I mean, just one of those weeks. Had the hot putter. He missed a few shorties, but he's able to win by one stroke over Ben Griffin.
Yeah, so. we talked on long shots last week. You're going to have a hot putter to win there, and that's he did.
You would not have thought. The whole point is if you handicapped, who would get a hot putter? Based on form, you would not have guessed.
Yeah.
Robert McIntyre.
Yeah, probably alas. Not. Aaron Rye, I had a nice top 10 bet on Aaron Rye.
Oh,
he finishes
faded.
One shot off from cashing that. And then Tommy Fleetwood, bigger top 20 bet on him, one shot away from finishing top 20. So annoying tournament for me this week onto the Memorial.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, we'll be betting Xander top 10.
Have you already made a bet on Xander top 10?
I haven't made it yet, but as soon as those odds go up in town, I'll be checking after the show.
You'll be checking after the show.
All right.
We're also tracking college baseball, so this has been more of a lighter discussion today just because we are not yet to super regionals. We're kind of in this middle ground spot, so like for me, I just have some regional future tickets carrying over to today. There was some carnage, though, Kelly, over the weekend. I would describe it as a very it was a frustrating, kind of inconsistent weekend. A lot of the people that we've had on our network would corroborate that, as a lot of teams that were really well positioned fell flat on their face. Arkansas was like a -1,000 favorite yesterday. in an elimination game against SEMO, of all teams, Southeast Missouri State. Arkansas loses that game. Arkansas, who is heavily favored in their own regional, doesn't even get to the regional final, as Kansas State is a team that is headed to Super Regional. So Arkansas, a big flop. Wake Forest, preseason number one, who gained a lot of steam toward the end of the year. They go 2-0 over the weekend, Kelly. That was a huge shock.
See, I didn't know. Okay, this is good. I was only keeping track of the teams I had tickets on.
Yeah.
So the big losers. This is a great update.
Yeah, Wake Forest, a big loser. Vanderbilt had a very down year by their standards, but they're still always known as a powerhouse. Yeah. They went 2-0 and looked really bad in the process this weekend. Those were just a couple of the big ones. The one regional, so I lost. I had Indiana State as a long shot 3-1. They lost their first game to Illinois, which was brutal, Friday. They battled back, won a couple straight elimination games, but could not take out Kentucky. Kentucky holds serve, advances to Supers. I do have Oklahoma alive, and that was another big loser because Duke, en route to an ACC title last week, outscored their final three opponents 32-7 combined, and they were a very sexy sleeper team. The Duke Blue Devils, they just fall flat on their face. They end up getting bounced by Oklahoma yesterday. Oklahoma, so I've got them plus 160, who I was on with Gil last week talking about regional futures. Oklahoma, we feel pretty good because they're minus 260 today in that regional championship, 9 Eastern against UConn. And so that's kind of why, like, I'm not going to go back in and double dip on these teams. The one that's about to start, East Carolina, they were shocked by Evansville, the 4 seed, in the first game of that regional. Evansville is in the title game, but East Carolina comes all the way back. They eliminate Wake Forest. They beat Evansville yesterday. They pound them 19-4, and now East Carolina is a $2.85 favorite in a game that starts in 10 minutes there to punch their ticket to Super. So, again, you're having to pay still some pretty big prices on these elimination games if it is the sleepers that have made it to the last round or last round of the regional against the top seeds.
One betting angle question on the overall College World Series futures board here. Are there any of these teams, and I guess I'm thinking more of like an Oklahoma State or something like that, who I have a ticket on, to win the College World Series, but some of these teams in these elimination games today, where you're going to be able to get much longer odds, right, than you will tomorrow if they win in advance, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, are there any of those that you think are interesting, longer shots right now?
And unfortunately right now, I mean, DraftKings, they do not have the World Series odds up, which kind of kills that idea, but I'm just looking around at other shops, because other books do have this up right now. Tennessee 3-1 favored in another book I'm pulling up, A&M plus 360. Yeah, if you're in a situation, because after the regionals you go to a best of three super regional.
Right. I mean, like North Carolina, LSU, I guess if you had a strong opinion on one of those sides,
sure.
Right? Like that could be one that those odds are going to be a lot shorter when we look at this tomorrow.
The other thing I'd add, and I learned this in a sense the hard way last year, where I had a TCU, you know, big ticket on, I think it was 40-1 on,
right,
TCU to win the College World Series. You know, I took a little piece off in the regional because they were in Arkansas's regional. TCU ends up winning. I let it ride through supers, but then, you know, as much as it is enticing to say like a North Carolina 14-1, all right, you win, now you're in supers and you're at a better, you know, in a much better position. It is really, really hard to properly monetize a ticket with the double elimination format of Omaha. And again, that's what I learned last year. I mean, I fortunately won, you know, took a little bit of profit in TCU, not as much as I would have liked, because, you know, they ended up going, they lost right away in the College World Series. They go to the elimination bracket, but then they win a couple games, you know, and it becomes very frustrating when you're like, all right, well, I'm almost rooting for them just to lose so I can just get this hedge over with and make a profit. That's where I would kind of hold back a little bit. As much as normally we would think of that as an angle, it's not the same thing as, say, you know, game 7 of a Stanley Cup, like a conference final, where you're betting on a team, and if they win, now the odds will be cut drastically. Like, there's still so much work to do, even if you get to supers. And that's why, to me, it's more like I don't really want to look at teams until they are truly, like, probably supers and on, with their an elimination game, like say, like Texas A&M, who to me is my number one team in the country, and A&M, if they were to go down, say 1-0 in a super regional next week, that's the time where you like that is a situation where their future is going to drop wildly, and you should get pretty good value coming back.
Okay,
granted, your margin for error now is very little, but those are more the situations that I would target as opposed to thinking that one game away from moving to the next round, with so much still to be decided that you are going to see the odds reduced that greatly.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's just how I look at it.
Well, let's go, Knowles. I did pick up a winner on that this weekend.
There we go,
that was
Kelly.
Great. It's a lot of scientific process, a lot of hard data behind that bet, yeah. Ben. Definitely not just buying in on FSU. But good to see him third on the futures board now. Let's go.
Casper Ruud gets underway against Taylor Fritz in about 5 minutes. Ruud paired with Sasha Zverev later today. Two-team little money line play that's around minus 110. French Open round four today. Blast hanging out, as always, with Kelly Bidlin. The big thanks to our crew here behind the scenes, Bar Canada at the D. We're back for more tomorrow on A Numbers Game as we continue here on VSiN and the DraftKings Network up next.